broadside of a barn with a football, apparently. And, you know, the poor long-suffering Jets fans, my apologies go out. But, you know, really, the newspapers were all Mark Sanchez all the time, and Eli was an afterthought, but Eli's got the two rings.
Right. He's one of Sandra's favorites, isn't he, Mr. Sanchez? But not because of his football prowess, I guess.
Right, right. Yeah.
But the other
good-looking man.
Of eye candy. Yeah. Oh, mercy. You know, another thing, too, that you had on one of your shows, you talked about Dick Clark, and because I haven't spoken to you for a while. But anyway, I was listening to one of your podcasts, and Dick Clark came up in the interview about what he did on New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
And it's so right. Michael Moore really nailed what Dick Clark was all about in one of his movies.
Yeah, with him driving away, flipping the bird.
Yeah.
Out of the limousine. Yeah.
Right, right. He wouldn't give Michael Moore the time of day. And Michael Moore just really exposed him. His restaurant chain, I guess, that he had in the Detroit area. And he was bringing in low-wage workers from the inner city and just really abusing them and exploiting these workers and not allowing them to form a union or not giving them good wages and benefits and really keeping them to a strict timetable that was tough for them to meet because they had to travel so far, because he couldn't get suburban workers to take these jobs at these restaurants he had in these suburban malls. He had to bring in people from inner city Detroit to abuse and exploit, and Michael Moore really exposed that big time, and Dick Clark did not like that at all. So he was exposed in one of the Michael Moore films. I'm not sure which one, but it might have been the one about looking for Roger Smith or something like that.
Roger and Me?
Roger and Me, right.
Yeah, that was his first big one. Was that what it was? Because I can't see it being part of Bowling for Columbine.
It could have been one of the Columbine. There were two Columbine films, too. It could have been in one of those also, but I'm not sure. Michael Moore did really expose Dick Clark for what he, a pure one percenter plutocrat, man. Just not into working people whatsoever. Anyway.
Yeah.
Not a good person.
No, and I caught some flack for that, for suggesting that he's just going to kind of roll him beeping out like Captain Pike onto the stage. And you know, go enjoy your golden years, Dick. Nobody knows who you are. I mean, I'm about the youngest generation that knows who Dick Clark is, and I'm 49. It's not a good sign.
Oh, man. You know, it's like in sports, too. You got to know when to retire. I mean, like Jimmy Brown, man. Retire at the peak.
Yeah,
Your image.
Yeah, Thurman Thomas. You know, goodbye now. And
yeah.
Before you hurt your image, yeah, before you destroy your body, you know, Jim Brown is still around. You might not be saying that about him if he had continued to get his body beaten up.
And a guy like Joe Namath, who can hardly walk now.
Well, and look, I would not, for whatever money he's got, I would not take that amount of money to be walking around as Peyton Manning in 10 years.
Right.
Because he's going to be moving like a 75-year-old man.
Right.
And so, you know, the idea of him coming back, you know, I just hope Archie and Eli sit down after Archie's given him a good noogie. It might hurt his neck. Just sit down. You know, listen, Peyton, you don't have to do it, okay? You don't, because it's not worth the cost that is potentially going to be imposed.
Yeah.
Because the Colts are just, and that's, you know, that's the other brutality of professional sports, Andy. Is just like any other occupational enterprise in this country, they treat the workers like crap. Doesn't matter what Peyton did for you, what have you done for me lately, and we ain't going to pay you that kind of money, you and your crippled ass neck. No. You go do that somewhere else.
Right, you're basically just a commodity out there.
Yeah.
You're just a resource.
And that's why the NFL players at least made a clear statement about what they thought about Indiana's right to work law. At least they spoke up. Not that I guess it made any difference, but it probably made some people feel better. Let people know what side they're on.
Well, they collected bargain, too. You know, they'll be after them someday also. It's just a matter of time.
Well, lest we forget, the owners locked them out just last year.
Right.
And they had to go to court to get that broken.
Right.
And one of the people who went was, I think, Peyton Manning.
Yeah. Just another item, one of my favorite subjects, John Corzine, this MF Global continuing saga that goes on. I saw an article the other day. The trustee who's handling, trying to find this $1.2 billion, of course, that they're looking for. You know, something you could lose every day. They would say the trustee who was looking into that was, they were consistently commingling their proprietary trading funds with their clients' funds. That was normal operating procedure.
And didn't you tell me that that's legal in Europe but not legal here?
Right. That $50 million or so was always getting mixed up. That was happening all the time. That's something that should not, that is illegal in the United States, but again, in Europe it's legal. But evidently they were doing it here. They were commingling the funds. And, you know, like, again, where is the CFTC, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission? Where are they? You know, they should have been kept, they should have caught that. A failure.
Right. Well,
you know,
it's like,
you find out that nothing's changed.
Well, it's like when you hear one of these cases come out, and God knows it seems like they're every 2 or 3 weeks, Andy, one of these cases comes out that says, 52 people have been sickened and 12 people have been killed because of E. coli tainted hamburger meat from the factory in Busted Knuckle, Nebraska. And the first question we'd like to ask is, Jesus, where was the USDA?
Right.
But there's an answer. The USDA was nowhere to be found because the USDA has been under assault for a generation now by the corporate, the proto-fascist bastards who want the USDA to, I mean, they'd like it if it was just canceled, turned off, walk out, turn off the lights, lock the doors, no more USDA. But barring that, they'll just weaken it to a point of absolute ineffectuality. And that's roughly what's happened with anything resembling oversight or investigatory powers on Wall Street, right?
Yeah, I'm with you. We've said this before. I totally agree. It's underfunded, understaffed. They don't get the money they need.
And it's not accidental.
Years. Excuse me?
I said, and that's not accidental.
Right. And, of course, if we had a transaction tax, we could put a little 0.01% or so on every transaction on Wall Street. We'd have plenty of money to fund the SEC and to fund the regulatory bodies and the Commodities Futures Exchange. That would be all covered like it used to be. When the transaction tax first came into effect, up until the 60s or early 70s, we had transaction taxes that did fund a lot of the regulatory bodies.
Right, but because that's not a regressive tax on poor people, there's no interest, or not no interest, but it's long against it happening. And to use our USDA example, that's like suggesting that there should be a dollar per cow slaughtered. You'd have a pretty nice little
war chest.
Yeah, for the USDA to fund inspectors but beef, it's what's for dinner, doesn't want that to happen.
Right.
And I understand, Andy, that that's one of your fundamental points of grief, as it is mine. Of the workings of this government. And the question is, if we start where we are instead of Oshkosh, how do you get that out?
Well, did you also see the article where Tim Geithner's advance man, I think his communications guy at Treasury, a guy named Richard Seward, was just offered a job at Blackstone? I'm sorry, not at Blackstone, at Goldman Sachs. He's taken over, I think the guy's name is Von Prague, who was their communications media guy. at Goldman. He's going to quit. He's been there for 9 or 10 years. And this guy, Seward, who was the chief media guy for Tim Geithner, one of Geithner's good buddies, is taking the media job at Goldman Sachs. I mean, that's the whole problem. It's a total revolving door. If you want to work for these companies that we're supposed to be regulating, I mean, if you want a good job after government, you cater to these people, and basically you're working as a surrogate of them while you're in government.
Right, and there is that ongoing farce. There's supposed to be a waiting period, isn't there? Like 6 months or something after you leave a government job before you go to work, and there's the farce of cones of silence and walls of separation, and it's just like a politician's blind trust. Nobody actually believes that that's the reality, because there's so much evidence in the corporate culture to suggest that it's not.
Right. It's just a revolving door. You step into government, you step out. You step into government, you step out. And you're not working for the good of the people, the citizenry, the common good. You're working for the corporation you're supposed to be regulating. It's a joke.
You know, that's like
a joke.
That's,
it's been a joke. And that's one reason I really, after all this time, hate. I'm sorry, Bob. I do. I have this intense hate for Mr. Obama. I didn't mean to call him a dog. I mean, I was just using metaphor there, because most of you say that saying that some dogs don't hunt. I mean, that's what
I
really meant by that. Where he doesn't hunt, meaning he doesn't go to bat for us.
Yeah, no, a dog that won't get off the porch, that's an old...
Right?
Yeah.
He won't use, like, the radio like Franklin Delano Roosevelt used with his fireside chats to keep on pulverizing the message home, because he could have a great bully pulpit. Nobody has a bigger bully pulpit in this country. Everything Mr. Obama does is broadcast all over the place, and he could do it. He could keep on pounding away, but he doesn't.
But you know what, Andy? That's interesting you would bring up that particular topic, you know, using the radio as a medium. I really think there is a learning curve there that should be addressed inside the White House communications team. But also, the president, what happened, and this is one of those goofy little history moments, we got the constitutional amendment that banned a third presidential term. We got term limits on the presidency because of the success being reelected that FDR had. Right?
Republicans didn't want that to happen.
Yeah, ever again.
Oh, what happened when he was in there?
Well,
man.
By the same token,
friggin'.
Yeah, by the same token, they saw also what happened when a president used the medium of the day. So I don't know what the exact history of it is. I don't know who first started doing it. But for as long as I can remember, if you happen to be a radio journalist and you're working a Saturday, all day long, you'll have 4 or 5 clips to choose from. President so-and-so delivered his weekly radio address today. And that is the media pigeonholing the president and taking that bully pulpit away, so that the guy who's working Saturdays has something to news read about. You know, there is a presidential weekly radio address. Reagan did it, Carter did it. I don't know how far back it goes, honestly, but you know, that's his time on the radio, and there's a weekly response by some designated member of the party that doesn't have the White House. But they could take a lesson with that kind of thing. Do you remember? And maybe not, because you don't pollute your brain with right wing radio. It was nothing during the 8 years of the Bush administration. It was nothing. It happened 3 or 4 times for the oxymoron Rush Limbaugh to say, "And let's go to Dick in D.C." "Hi, Rush. This is the Vice President of the United States, Dick Cheney." And it really was. And they'd sit there and they'd talk for 30 minutes or 45 or an hour like they were just old chums feasting over a corpse.
Right.
Well, I mean, Dick was feasting over a corpse. Obviously, Rush Limbaugh was eating boogers if you saw the photo from the Super Bowl.
Right.
But they did that. Now, when Bill Clinton was in the White House, there was no radio guy with the exception of Malloy, for him to call. But now there is a pretty broad spectrum and growing every day, as evidenced by the work that Cliff Schechter and his team are doing in D.C. There's a growing body of people for the president to reach out to, and it doesn't have to be one of those staid, boring, dull-ass sit downs in the Lincoln bedroom or whatever that you see on TV. You need to hear a president kind of freewheeling and riffing, especially if he's smart enough on his feet to do it, which this president, like him or hate him, is. Let Joe Biden do the work. You know, he came out with a great off the cuff one the other day. He said, Osama bin Laden is dead and General Motors is alive. It was a great line, regardless of what you think. It was a great line. Just from
sound bites play. Bumper sticker.
You know, so where's
play, there's no question about it. So, sticking to the Republicans. That's what they do to us with these sound bites.
Right. So where's that Joe Biden call to Tom Hartman? You know, bless his heart.
Bernie Sanders gets it. Bernie Sanders gets it. They have
exactly
Bernie.
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders understands that every week. And you got to catapult the propaganda.
Bingo.
Although Bernie Sanders does isn't propaganda. You know, the right wing understands that. They understand it's repetition, repetition, repetition. It's the Joseph Goebbels, Edward Bernays stuff. Repetition, repetition, repetition. Keep drilling it home.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, there's a reason that if, for instance, you tune in to Flush Flembaugh, he is literally still doing shtick that he was doing when he was a disc jockey in Pittsburgh, talking about the lady in Rio Linda, or with half my brain tied behind my back, or with talent on loan from God. He came up with those lines when he was a disc jockey in Pittsburgh, and he's still using them to this day because they create an identifiable moment, Andy. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And we
works, you stick with it.
We still don't get it.
And that's
sad. And frankly, the value or benefit of fearlessly fielding a few calls, you can't overstate the value of that. You know, let's say for a minute, just hypothetically, that the President of the United States, Barack Obama, went on Hartman's show. And let's say that we got that Andy from California managed to get in. Well, if you gave him 30 seconds of your best, Andy, and he responded in kind, I don't mean like, you know, screaming at each other or anything, but that would have a weight and a value of its own. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, actually, I've gotten on Hartman's brunch with Bernie more than once, and I have been able to come up with some pretty good zingers to give Bernie. I mean, on free trade, I remember. I also did one on Obama with what he did with this spiel I have with the senatorial candidate that he's always back the reactionaries, like Joe Lieberman or Arlen Specter and so forth, and
Blanche Lincoln.
I've gotten to drill that home, and Bernie's gotten off, so sure, that would have a great impact. Anytime you have a citizen coming up with some pretty good points that you don't hear in the mainstream media, people just don't hear a lot of these things that a normal citizen can convey, and if you do it articulately, God, you can really make an impact. No question.
Yeah, and you know, one of the...
The citizenry do it.
Right, because where else is any politician actually going to hear the citizenry? There's, you know, I remember the story of, what was it, his first 4th of July celebration. W was in a rope line somewhere, and a guy said, a guy shook his hand and said, I just want you to know, I think you're a terrible president. And W's just moving along down the rope line, and he looks at him and says, "Who gives a fuck what you think?" and keeps moving.
Right. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. Hey, when I go to these open houses and I hear politicians talk, I don't want to hear the politician talk. I want to hear the people talk, and I want to hear how the politician reacts to what the people say. And I said that.
Well, and that's a big part of the operating philosophy.
I can hear you talk all day.
Yeah, that's a big part of the operating philosophy going on here. You know, there's plenty of radio shows out there where people have senator this or congressman that. With very few exceptions, I don't care. Because I would far rather hear from Andy, I would far rather hear from Sandra, I would far rather hear from John, I would far rather hear from David or Juanita or any number of the folks, you know, Kevin in Colorado Springs. I put much more value on that because those are, you know, that's people like, because I'm not some elite guy who's getting $50 million a year. This is a bunch of working people talking. The same thing that goes on, you know, with Rick Smith. You know, a working guy behind a microphone.
Right.
And
you know, I know you wouldn't want to hear this, but a guy you think Obama would gravitate to, where you know he would get softballs thrown at, is Ed Schultz.
Well, sure. Randy.
And get on there. At least it's right. Randy Rhodes is another one that would throw him a bunch of softballs. Hell, she does it all day on her show. But anyway, but hell, there are avenues for him to do that. But you know, he just doesn't want to alienate. He's just not.
Well, and that's
he's too afraid. He's too cowardly to alienate independents.
It's
by going with a so-called quote. You know, progressive talk show host, which is.
But Andy, I would submit to you, I would submit to you that that's institutional, okay? Because that goes back a long way to the general negotiating from a point of fear approach that the Democratic Party generally has, because they're afraid.
But you, and you brought up Dick Cheney has no problem.
Right.
Going on Rush Limbaugh's show any chance he goddamn gets. Probably he has an open call to get on there any second and knock off anything Rush would have on his agenda.
Oh, yeah. There's a one-button dialer inside Dick's coffin. You know, they're,
right. They have the red phone there.
Yeah, just
you know, the special phone right into Dick Cheney to Rush Limbaugh so he can get his, you know, catapult that propaganda. But it's unbelievable. Republicans have no problem doing that. But Democrats, no. Won't do it.
No.
Won't touch it.
And
pick up the backbone.
And it's because they're afraid. They're afraid they're going to get called liberals. Well, Jesus, call me a liberal. Give me a chance to wear it proudly. Respond to it. You know, what did JFK say? And, you know, JFK was actually far more conservative than most people like to admit.
Call me a liberal, and I'm
but
proud of it.
Yeah, he said, I'm proud of it. You call me that. If by that you mean blah, 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 I'm proud to be
absolutely
one. In an instant...
The working class, bringing people out of poverty, call me a liberal.
Yeah, and in an instant, he completely turned that entire debate around. You know, by the way, since I mentioned JFK, and this is just one of those cultural things, I'm sure you've seen the story that's out there, Andy. It's been all over the place, and it's really disgusting. New revelations of JFK's teenage lover.
Yeah.
And I've
just seen the headlines. I don't really.
Yeah, I haven't either, but it made me so mad. Because, now, I mean, I'm not one of these people who's opposed to finding out new things about old stuff. But that is not brought out to advance the cause of history. That in no way does that advance our knowledge of anything except that JFK liked to have sex. And I think that's already pretty damned well established, don't you? But there's
it's just another way to take away from his character.
Yeah.
That's the whole idea, to put down his character to make him look like that he was just a sex maniac in the White House, just another Bill Clinton sort of deal to besmirch his whole presidency. That's the whole takeaway from whatever good he did, and the real things. Hey, the guy got his head blown off for taking on the Pentagon and the Chief of Staff and the Cuban mob folks and the right-wing Cubans. He lost his life for that, for standing up
yeah.
for the United States, for the people. What more could you do to a guy? He took his life away.
Well, you know, now they'll just...
Right wing got their jollies. And life has never been the same in the United States since then.
No, it has not. I mean, that's our brother's Gracchi moment, to go back to Roman history. That's where everything changes.
Right. They changed the whole course of history by doing that.
Yeah.
The whole course of history. Vietnam probably never would have happened.
Well, it's like talking about 2000 and, you know, what if Al Gore had become president? Because, you know, I've had right-wingers look at me incredulously when I say, well, you know, for starters, 9/11 wouldn't have happened.
Right.
And I believe that with every fiber of my being, understanding and I'm believing, but I think it's backed up by evidence. Because
right.
you think of that Hart-Rudman report that said airport security is so badly lax that something awful is going to happen. That was handed to George W. Bush within a day or two of him taking office. And he handed it, I'm not kidding, to Brownie. And it was never seen or heard from again.
Right, the hoarse whisper, the total incompetence.
Yeah, my shirt was...
And the whole thing was a whitewash anyway. We don't know what really happened. All I do know is that we put a lot of money into defense and a lot of money into NORAD, and we have 60 fighter squadrons running around the United States. And you tell me that there couldn't have been more done when that happened, or more people couldn't have been on top of this whole thing. The whole thing was a total whitewash, and things happened within our government, and things happened with those guys in San Diego who the CIA totally botched up with the FBI, and the whole thing with what's her name up in Minnesota?
Oh, yeah.
The woman who had
who was screaming about, you know, this ain't right, this is,
you know, let us into his computer, give us the ability, you know, the Fourth Amendment to break into his computer and see what he's got there and what's going on and who the other co-conspirators are, and they wouldn't let her do it. I mean, it was just insane. The whole thing was totally botched, and of course that's everything dealing with Bush. It almost seems like it was botched so much they wanted it to happen. I mean, they wanted something.
Well, and again,
ISI and Bin Laden and Pakistan. This whole thing is.
Well, and I go back to the.
Nothing adds up. Nothing adds up.
Everybody always talks about the presidential daily briefing of August 6th.
Right.
That's almost anticlimactic to me as compared to that report I mentioned to you a couple of minutes ago, because that thing laid out chapter and verse the failings of airport security at the time. The other thing that I find fascinating, and I gotta go out and find the name of this book because I've referenced it a couple of times. I've never seen any other mention of this incident anywhere, except that I've talked about it from time to time. And that is the speech that was given to the graduating class of 2001 at West Point by Paul Wolfowitz. The commencement speech. And in that speech, he says, I can't tell you what's about to happen, but all I can tell you is be prepared. And that was June the 6th, 2011. Just a little bit more than 3 months from the attacks on the Twin Towers. Now, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole of,
well, all you know is there was so much incompetence, so much miscues, so many mistakes, it's hard to believe that some of it wasn't orchestrated.
Well, you can't...
Some of it wasn't let to happen. That's the thing. It's you have to be a non-critical thinker, totally oblivious to reality, if you don't think that something was going on somewhere.
Well, and again, I've always
way,
kind of...
Way beyond where it should have gone.
I've always kind of prided myself, Andy, on trying to think about this, think about these issues in ways that others perhaps don't. And here's one of those examples, and that is this. We had behind us on September the 10th, 2001, we had behind us the experience of the what was called the hunting of the president, the miserable, tawdry business of the Lewinsky and Whitewater business, where a sitting president was hailed into a deposition. Okay? While he was still in office. All right? And that was deemed okay. all the way up to the Supreme Court, right?
Right.
And yet, right. When September 11th, 2001 happens, the 9/11 Commission cannot put any of the significant players under oath. They all testify by agreement without taking an oath, and George W. Bush, the President of the United States, is not allowed to appear in front of the 9/11 Commission without Dick Cheney by his side. Now, you can't take, you cannot take the deposition of Bill Clinton and overlay it with the way that went down and say that, you know, no, that ain't right. And you don't have to get to little bombs planted in the towers to say that.
Right. Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, it's an empire. You said this time it's an empire. And the Republicans rule this empire as a double standard. And, you know, what happens to the Democrats just does not happen on the Republican side.
Right. And that's my whole point. If that had been, let's assume that Al Gore becomes president and 9/11 happens anyway. Is there anybody in their anything resembling their right mind who thinks for an instant that the Congress would not have, by God, insisted that the President of the United States not appear before them in person, absent the Vice President, and be sworn to tell the truth? Because if you can say any of that, I don't think you're operating in reality world. You know what I mean?
Right. Scrutiny would be intense. The scrutiny would be intense. Nothing would be left.
There would have been impeachment proceedings.
Would be turned over everywhere.
There would have been impeachment proceedings.
Absolutely. That'd been the first thing they would have done. Absolutely. Hey, just one more thing before I get out of here. Did you see the transcripts they came out with on Larry Summers regarding the stimulus package?
Yes, I did.
Coming through. That was just unbelievable to me that he admits that, you know, we could do a $1 billion stimulus, but I wouldn't know how to do it. I have no idea how to put $1 billion to work. I can't even do $300 billion, which is what they actually did for actually reconstruction projects. I mean, he didn't even know how to use $300 billion in infrastructure. That was way too challenging, way beyond. Cause that's not
well, I read that same passage, Andy, and on the one hand, it's possible to read it like, you know, what kind of godforsaken numbskull are you? And there's another way to read it where you say, where the question is, it sort of presents an idea of the enormity of the problem. You want to get money out there doing things, but you don't know where to put it because the crisis, the collapse was so profound that it plays into that whole, I hated that phrase, shovel ready. Yeah, there was nothing ready. There was nothing ready for a shovel, and I'm not trying. Please understand, Andy, I am not trying to put everything off on the Bush administration. But this country had been broken into a million tiny pieces for 8 years, and for 8 years, nothing had happened in the infrastructure. You know, remember when the bridge collapsed in Minnesota?
Right. On Pawlenty and the boys, don't put any money into the infrastructure.
Right.
I was just going to say, with Francis Perkins, and I think it was Hopkins, Harry Hopkins, was he under Roosevelt? I believe they were the people that just said, put people to work. Get them doing anything. Just build a ditch, fill it up, and then dig the ditch again and fill it up again. Just get people doing to build trails in the national forest. Do something.
I have never seen them, but
Bob is so far behind in everything, in infrastructure. There are so many rail systems in this country, the infrastructure, transportation, tunnels in New York. New York is a hellhole to try to get around in. I mean, all metropolitan areas in this country are so far behind. Airports, you know, the transportation system is a nightmare.
And an enlightened country.
And on and on.
Right, and an enlightened country is doing that design work long before the first cubic yard of concrete is poured. And that's what happened in those 8 years, is we stopped doing any design work, any front-end work, any skull sweat, because that administration was hell-bent on collapsing this country and watching the collapse happen after they had already left office and accomplished their goal.
Right. And these projects, big projects like that, building bridges, building tunnels, building mass transit, putting trains, cross-country trains in high-speed trains, will bring dividends and dividends years and years into the future with what positive things they do for our economy, just making life easier and more efficient for workers and people and to get goods around this country.
Right, but there's a fundamental disconnect in right-wing thinking, because they don't want that, because a lot of people have a hard time getting all the way to the ground on this one, Andy. Republicans don't want that because they hate this country. They don't like the Constitution. They don't like separation of church and state. They don't like the Civil Rights Act. They don't like... They don't like the interstate highway system. The only thing they like is the military, and the only reason they like the military is because it serves as a life support system for defense contractors. And getting that all the way into the deep gray matter of one's mind is actually painful. I mean, you don't want to think that there's an entire segment of your country that despises your country, that at the same time that they, you know, go to war over whether you're wearing a flag pin or not. But I've been at this too long and paying attention to stuff for too long to come to any other conclusion. You know, you talk about making.
I agree.
You talk about making jobs.
I agree with you.
I've never been to this part of Louisiana, but I'm told that in Louisiana there are bridges in the middle of bayous that don't have roads on either end. And those were ordered built there by Huey Long, because people had to have jobs. And he figured, okay, we'll build the bridge first and then we'll get the road to them.
Right.
But people went to work. You know, I'm not 3 miles from a state park, and most of the state parks in this state were constructed by the CCC or the WPA, and it's that beautiful old mortared sandstone work using the local stone from around here, mortaring it together, using logs for rails between the pillars, and it's gorgeous, and it lasts forever, and you know, we didn't really need it.
Right, but it's putting money in people's pockets, and it's the multiplier effect.
Yes!
Like Eisenhower said, you know, you build one battleship, you could have built like 10 high schools. You're just taking away from the wealth of the people, from the wealth of the country, things that'll bring again dividends and, economic wealth going way into the future. But when you put it into defense, it's just like throwing it and flushing it down a toilet bowl, man.
Oh, and I go back to the.
No value given to the citizenry, to the country, to the economic well-being. And it's the economic well-being that really makes a country great. It's the economy and its people and how healthy and well they're doing that really makes a country great and makes you a force in the world. And I really believe, I totally agree, that the reason that the Eastern Europe and the Soviet bloc went under is because of the great wealth of this country, our consumer goods, the goods we produced for the world, just drove those economies into the ground. It was our general industry, our consumerism and the wealth that we created within the people of this country that drove those economies into the ground, because people bought our goods. They were useful in increasing the efficiency and the productivity of people around the world.
You know, it's so...
The military, it had nothing to do with Ronald Reagan.
No, it's so interesting you mention that, because, well, the people who are familiar with this program will know that periodically I play Jimmy Buffett songs, because I love Jimmy Buffett. Always have. Well, there's actually a live recording of his, I think he was in Cincinnati or somewhere, where he was just monologuing in front of a song. But it was during the days of the Cold War in the Soviet Union. And he said, I suggest that we fly over the Soviet Union and throw $100 bills out of airplanes. Then we fly over the Union and Soviet Union, and we throw out catalogs to Victoria's Secret, Shorty's Pilot Shop, and L.L. Bean. And then we wait for the Soviet Union to collapse. Isn't that what you just described?
Yeah, basically, because they weren't into the consumer goods or providing for their people. They made nothing. They drove themselves to decimation through funding their military and building goods that were no good, cars that didn't work,
I've got a straight.
That would break down. They couldn't build anything of quality. Well, we could in our electronics industry, cranking out semiconductors, the entrepreneurship here, the computer software, the innovations that took place. The Soviets couldn't, Eastern Bloc couldn't compete. Close to compete.
And so now that they've had a chance, you know, once the Soviet Union went away, what happened? I mean, isn't Moscow the most expensive city in the world to live in now? I think it is.
It's up there. Well, they have their oligarchs. You know, they got their problems now.
Right, because they've got a class of people who are raking it in hand over fist and can't get enough.
Right. They want it all.
Yeah, they do. They do, and it's the absolute truth.
All over the world. It's not only a problem here of the wealth gap.
No, that's what I said. I said at the beginning of the program. There is, you know, global capitalism sees it really is a mercantilist viewpoint, Andy. Where if you've got, and you know, the key to mercantilism is to understand that if you have something, that means you can only have it at the expense of somebody else having less. And it really does apply to natural resources and non-renewable substances. And that's what you see in this devolution of capitalism that we're living in now.
Right. It's a zero-sum game. There are winners, and there are losers. And like what Louis Brandeis says, either we can create great wealth in this country, or we can have a democracy. But we can't have both. Period. And that's what's happened in our country. We no longer have a representative republic democracy. We have guys, billionaires like Adelson, who's funding campaigns, just changing the total character of our politicals. It's so skewed to the top 1%.
That's another one of those moments where I realize I will never be rich, Andy, because I can't imagine being Mr. Adelson or that freak who's backing Santorum and having the kind of money where you can just throw $10 million down a South Carolina rat hole on Newt Gingrich's behalf. Because if I had that kind of money, I'd be broke in a week. But the fact of the matter is... Well, the fact of the matter is, if I had that kind of...
You're worth a couple billion.
I'd buy myself a 125-foot motor sailing yacht and go out in the middle of the ocean and tell the world to F off. Just go from beautiful place to beautiful place.
Yeah, but they want it all, Bob.
Right. I don't have the mind for it. I saw an article on Alternet the other day that said it was some Wall Street trader saying, being a trader on Wall Street is about the most useless profession on earth. You do nothing except rake in money for which you did nothing.
Right. You're just moving money around. You're shifting money. In the Czech Republic, called ceny papíry. You know, paper money.
Yeah.
Stockbroker or trader, ceny papíry, paper money, man, just moving money around.
You're just sitting
you're
there
trading no value.
You're just sitting there dipping a toe in that algorithmic stream that runs on the internet, and just, you know, whatever wets your beak, it just builds up over time. And the next, but
what you're doing is you're speculating. You're driving up prices or you're driving down price. And what you hurt is the common man by doing that, because you're creating nothing. But you're driving up prices or driving them down, and you're not holding product. You're not buying the product. You're not using it. You're just moving it around. Right. It's got to be regulated. So we need strict regulation.
And the question is,
funding venture Santorum, something Freeze, F-R-I-E-S-S, Freddie Freeze or something like that.
Yeah.
He's a big mutual fund guy out of Jackson. Oh, he's got mutual fund operations all over the United States.
But he's also a trust fund baby because he inherited it. He didn't go make it.
Actually been in meetings or had been in a presentation. I used to live in Denver, and he presented a couple times with a firm I used to work for there. And I've been in rooms where he's presented. I'm not sure how he originally... But he had been really, now I forget the name of the funds, but he has a mutual fund family that at times has been pretty successful. But then again, he totally distorts the political system with somebody like that. And again, that's where they make their money, trading, you know, getting back to this trading thing. What value are they really creating? He's moving money around.
Yeah.
A lot of it into his hands, distorting our political system.
Right. Well, it's all straight out of The Godfather. You know, I just want to wet my beak. And that's what they do. But instead of wetting their beak, they did dive in and get completely soaking wet from the top down. And the question is, you know, with Mr. Obama coming out and saying, I would like to see a constitutional amendment fixing Citizens United. For him, that's fairly bold. Because
he said that, huh? I didn't know he actually came out and said that.
Yeah. He said it in the context of saying, I am not going to unilaterally disarm in this campaign, and I will use super PACs. Because that had been a right-wing talking point. Well, you know, he's opposed to them. He can't use them. Oh, yeah, and he came out and said, oh, yes, I can. But he's been plain in his support for a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. You know, he criticized Citizens United from the podium in a State of the Union address, and that's where that sorry, sleazy, slimy Alito hung his head and shook it back and forth like some sort of shaggy dogs. No, that's not what it means.
Sammy the Fish Alito.
Yeah, Sammy the Fish.
It was good of him to do that. Well, he's got to keep on pushing that. Keep on the message, man. Citizens United has got to go down.
And I guess just what I'm asking, Andy,
message, is... Mr. Obama.
Yeah, can we give him some credit once in a while? Just understanding, you know, understanding the world of empire that we're in. You know, when somebody behaves like a Claudius instead of a Caligula, can we at least say, well, you know, we like Claudius better than Caligula. We don't want to see a horse led into the Senate. Although, you know, now that Rand Paul is in there, that may have already happened.
I'm sorry, Bob. He's been such a disappointment. Such a great disappointment. And I don't think we should... I really think the blame should be put on him for losing in 2010 and losing the House. The blame needs to be put on the leadership of the Democratic Party and needs to be put on him.
Yeah, well, look, I fault him.
He has disappointed... He has made it so it is impossible to get any momentum going on the Democratic side or people excited. He has destroyed that excitement.
Well, here's the way.
The blame has to go on him. It has to go on him and the leadership, and the leadership has to be removed. And that's how I feel, Bob.
Well, here's how he has to be removed. Here's how I map that.
I'm sorry.
I understand.
I'm sorry.
Here's how I map that. I blame him for his cushy relationship with Rahm Emanuel. Okay, I blame Rahm Emanuel because Rahm Emanuel. Well, no, wait. I'm talking. You mentioned the 2010 elections, and I want to address that. Rahm Emanuel, before there was an Obama candidacy, Rahm Emanuel was full throated in his disgust for Howard Dean's 50 state strategy.
Absolutely.
And he went at it hammer and tongs. So,
right.
Obama sided with Rahm Emanuel, and consequently, after the 2008 election, Rahm Emanuel saw to it that Howard Dean was thrown out of the DNC and replaced with that pusillanimous little bit of nothing, Tim Kaine. Okay?
And how could he do that after Howard Dean was so successful in 2008? He was a major success. The 50-state strategy was perfecto. It worked. It was successful.
But Rahm Emanuel was given credit for it. If you go back and you look at the coverage, Rahm Emanuel was given credit for taking the House because he put so-called blue dogs in place in the South who could defeat Republican opponents. That he was... But then, in 2010, when it all falls apart, it's the same blue dogs that lost us the House, because people, after watching them for 2 years, said, screw it, if I want a Republican, I'll vote for a real one. And so that was just a massive, massive strategic failure on Mr. Obama's part and on Rahm Emanuel's part. But make no mistake that Rahm Emanuel was the driving force behind it.
I don't give Rahm Emanuel any credit, Bob. For 2008, I don't give him any credit for bringing in blue dogs. I give all the credit to Howard Dean.
I do too.
And whatever the mass media or the corporate media says, I think they were dead wrong. because I think Rahm Emanuel has always been a one percenter. He's been a Wall Street guy. He's been funded by Wall Street. He made all his money with Wasserstein Perella. He made like $18 million. He's Wall Street's man. I mean, this is absurd. He's not a man of the people at all. He put Gabby Giffords, you know, the woman that got her, unfortunately, you know, bad for, got her head blown off. You know, she got in office because Rahm Emanuel put her there, and Rahm Emanuel actually gave hundreds of thousands of dollars to a right-wing Republican candidate to run against her so she would win, because he was so far out there that he beat the moderate Republican in the primaries in that district in Arizona.
Right.
So he gave Gabrielle Giffords that seat. And you know where Gabrielle Giffords came from? Wall Street!
Of course.
She was a Wall Streeter, too. She worked for one of the big Wall Street banking firms.
Well, you know, a Rahm Emanuel or a one percenter in general is not going to have political colleagues who are working at legal aid in the Bronx. You know, they're not, because that's what that culture is.
Right.
They don't move in those circles.
Right.
You know, Mr. Obama was a community organizer in Chicago for a while, but that was there was much said about that during the campaign, but that had been a long, long time ago. And he had gotten significantly up the ladder since.
Yeah. There was 10 years at the Chicago school in between that.
And see, that's another one of those things.
Indoctrination.
You know, Shakespeare said, "What's past is prologue," and you cannot work at the honest to God, you could not be a basket weaving professor at the University of Chicago, Andy, without being impacted by that filthy, Friedman-esque economic model. I mean, the whole institution is utterly corrupted by...
Right. Hey, even today in the New York Times, if you see that article they have on education and how the gap is falling, now they see, people with higher income are doing much better in getting further education-wise in college and so forth compared to the gap that used to be between blacks and whites. Is kind of, you know, low-income blacks and low-income whites are kind of coming together. The gap is narrowing between the two, but it's widening when you look at the income disparities and forget about race completely. Well, they even have a quote from a guy at the University of Chicago. They had to put that in there. They go, let's not get too into income here. A lot has to do with parenting. It's the parenting you have to worry about. They had to get a University of Chicago economics guy.
Sure, and you know what? That dovetails very nicely with something that Jim just reminded me of. He said he had just seen it on PBS. The latest from the frothy mixture, Rick Santorum. Now,
right.
Take what you just said and hear this in that context. Rick Santorum is now running around preaching that going to college causes students to become less religious.
Oh. So, I wonder why. Maybe they actually critically think.
Well, yeah. The Southern Baptist Church proved that with their own internal survey a couple of years ago. But take that in the context of what you just said about, you know, that commentator out of the University of Chicago. Well, you know, if you're a parent, you know, if you're a really staunch parent and you're worried about your child's immortal soul, well, you'd rather they be dumber than a bag of hammers than to have them go to one of them heathen colleges, right?
Well, Rick Santorum also got on Obama because Mr. Obama wanted to be able to send kids to college, and Rick Santorum just thought that was a bad thing, going to college. You don't want to do that. Why do you want to go to college?
Yeah, except for the fact that he went.
Right. It's okay for him, though, right? Worked well for him. And also in that article, it just brings up how the rich people on their kids are spending like 20 times the amount of money to get their kids, you know, in K through 12, better grades than what low income pay. I mean, it's enormous amounts of money being thrown at kids in the higher income brackets. Can you tell me that doesn't make a difference? And also they say the kids from higher income parents travel so much more. They get exposed to so much more, you know, overseas environments and just libraries and museums, and they have the discretionary income to kids into so many other events and you know, different educational type opportunities, that it's just, you know, mind-boggling the advantages somebody with higher income has. I mean, it's just, that's why the gap is just widening. And, of course, we're not putting the money into the education in the lower income areas anymore. It's just criminal. The inequality, that's why the inequality in the whole Occupy movement, the inequality in this country has gotten to a point that's unteenable. You know, it's just crushing us as a nation. Crushing us.
And it will have, and see, that's again, it's another cultural failure of ours to consider the long, you know, we were talking about the stuff, you know, the way you get something shovel ready is you have the design and the engineering going on in the front end. Well, it's the same thing with history. The things that you just described are things that we will not see the reaping of it in our lifetimes, Andy. But you know what? My kids and my grandkids damn sure are. And right. It is going to be hell on earth.
Well, again, you can create great wealth in this country, or you can have a democracy. You can't have both.
Yeah, I mean, consider
you
I was.
Can't have both.
I mentioned it a couple of nights ago. That photograph of my grandmother as a child, 6 or 7 years old, it is a photograph of horrifying, grinding poverty.
Right.
And it's 1900, 1901. And if you think about what the 1% were up to in 1901, well, the only reason they were able to be what they were up to was because a little 7-year-old girl was standing in front of a shack in West Virginia in rags. And that's the truth.
My grandfather had 6 kids to take care of during the Great Depression. Without Roosevelt and the CCC,
they die.
They starved.
They die.
They die, right? They starved. He had 6 kids. He had no... He was an immigrant. He could hardly speak English. Without the CCC, it's over. The only thing he had to make money was to get a still making vodka in the cellar. It's the only way he made extra money. He had no job.
Yeah, you know, our good friend Jude up in Washington just pointed out that the well-known list of the 14 characteristics of fascism, one of the characteristics on that list, and there's a very well-documented YouTube of Malloy reading it, and it's just stunning. But one of the defining characteristics of fascism, as Jude notes, is disdain for education.
Right.
Hello.
Absolutely.
Anybody?
Don't want people thinking.
Yeah.
Right. Don't want kids, especially kids in the lower class or middle class. Don't want them thinking. Don't want them critically thinking and to learn how to critically think. They might get ideas.
And those are dangerous things.
Ideas. Yeah.
Andy, have a wonderful weekend, my friend. It was a great conversation.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for letting me Bogart your time, man. You had me on for way too long.
No. There's nothing Bogarty about it. It's an interchange. It's a conversation. And like we said before, I'd rather have this conversation than a conversation with some senator.
All right, great. And I like I said in my email, I do value your opinion. You do a great job out there. Take care.
Thank you, Andy. Bye now. And again, my apologies for the beeps and the blinks. Jude also asking, was it the 80s when the Chicago school unleashed what Naomi Klein came to call the shock doctrine and brought people to their knees? Capitalism ran amok. It was another manifestation of it. Periodically, and the thing is, it's happened. It's like somebody coming by and putting a brick through your window. You know, if they do that and you put the window back up, and then a few months later they come by and they put another brick through your window and you put the window back in, well, eventually, and this is what has happened with Republicanism, eventually they just parked an entire truckload of bricks and started throwing them through working people's windows. Until we had no opportunity, we spent all our time ducking bricks instead of being able to replace the glass. And that, yeah, capitalism run amok. Exactly. And the Chicago school, but it goes all the way back. You know, just go and Wikipedia Milton Friedman. What a disgusting, what a hateful, what a miserable, what a pernicious influence on this country because of the influence he has had on the Republican Party and on economics in general. What a, you know, there's a list of people, you know, you can, you know, better they had never been born. Milton Friedman's one of them, at least for most of the working people in this country, because among his theories of the fact that mistreating workers is not as important as the overall health of the economy. Well, that's how you wind up. Look, you want to see an example of Milton Friedman's economics in action? Look at Foxconn in China, where instead of trying to ameliorate the causes of worker suicide, they just put a net around the building that'll catch the suicidal worker so they can stick him or her back on the assembly line. Yeah? Yeah. And by the way, as soon as the show's over, I'm going to start getting emails off to get the beepy things fixed. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon or evening, Bob.
Well, hey, Kevin, how are you?
All right, I thought I heard my name mentioned.
Well, I must have conjured you.
Hey, Andy, just to let you know, I enjoyed that conversation between you and him. So I want to let Andy know I didn't mind at all that you kept that conversation going.
Well,
you can't
get the value out of a conversation like what Andy was bringing to the table there, Kevin. You can't get that in, hey, well, thanks for calling to the program. Where are you calling from? What, busted knuckle? Okay, that's great. That's enough about you. Let's talk about me. You know, and that's the entirety of right-wing radio. All you get to do is get on the air and say, yeah, God, Rush, I just want to lick your bald spot. Yeah, that's all there is.
I didn't really have too much to say, although you talking about throwing the bricks through the window reminded me of a story of a criminal that decided he was going to break into a bank at night, and he winds up and throws the brick at the window, and the window returns it right back to him and knocks him out, which is where the police found him. And, you know, I was thinking during that story you were talking about, you know, we need some unbreakable glass there, but like you said, the bricks were just coming too fast and furious.
Yeah, all we can do is dodge bricks.
Yeah, well, no, there's one other thing you can do. Start throwing them back. And that's where I do agree with Andy to a large extent, is that, and where he feels a sense of betrayal, so do I, so do you. This president, in a lot of ways, has not stood up. Enough. He hasn't, you know, like he talked about being there with the unions. If there's a union problem, I'll be right there with him with my walking shoes on. And we never saw him once in Wisconsin. Now, on the other hand, I agree with you. We do have to give him credit. I do give him some credit. But it saddens me that it takes a campaign coming up like this one is for him to start really talking some populist talk. I would have liked to have heard him do that 2 years ago. And yet,
well, and let me add to that, Kevin, I want more than damn talk.
Exactly, exactly. And I am very upset. I understand it to a degree. I can understand it, but I'm very upset about him giving in on this. As Mike Malloy calls them, pregnancy control pills, it's the issue.
Yeah.
Because...
No, you'd like to have seen a line in the sand.
Exactly. And because every poll I've heard come out says that even Republicans, I think you cited 1 in 5, something like that, but every poll I've heard of, the majority of people don't want to give up birth control no matter what the Catholic Church says. And that would have been a great line in the sand to draw.
Right, and you know, our buddy Tosh wrote in earlier today to point out there was a study some time back, he said he thought it was from the Guttmacher Institute, that pointed out that the majority of abortions are had by women who already have children and who are actually in stable relationships. You know, so that means it is a considered choice. You know, not the scenario that the right wing likes to paint, where it's used by some poor slut to as a form of birth control. Yeah, that's some expensive birth control, as far as I know. But the other thing to add into this, you know, if you want an answer, Kevin, for why it is that the president can't do the bully pulpit thing, you know, I mean, he has a bully pulpit, right? Sure.
Yep.
But he's not on, and he is not on the TV 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And so, consequently, when we're talking about issues, and I think Mike is absolutely right, pregnancy control. Yeah, you have to take this statistic into account, Kevin. In recent weeks, as this thing has continued to persist about contraception, news channels have had experts on to talk about it. Now, with the understanding that there are only two forms of pregnancy control available to a male, to wit, condoms and not doing it,
yep.
The vast majority of contraception pregnancy control issues are leveraged by the female of the species. So, the female of the species, who also has to carry said fetus to term, should she so choose, has the greatest stake in that process. So how, then, can we square those facts with this one? Out of 146 guests who discussed contraception on cable news channels, 91 of them were men to 55 women. If you can square that up for me and make it make sense, Kevin, you're a far better mind than I am, because I can't. And the idea of, I mean, the very idea of having some priest opining about the decision of whether or when or how or why to reproduce is so foreign inside my mind as to make it incomprehensible. But never mind the priests. If it was all priests and all nuns, it would still be 91 priests to 55 nuns.
Yep.
So, that do you see what I'm saying? That severely dilutes the power of any bully pulpit? You know, there's a big difference between Franklin Delano Roosevelt doing a fireside chat when every radio network immediately switched over to that, versus 2012, where maybe three or four news channels would carry the president, but you could still check in with the Kardashians or see if somebody's yodeling on The Voice or American Idol or, you know, any number of the wide array of options that Americans have for amusing ourselves to death.
Yep.
So, I mean, again, it's just that those reality driven moments that make things difficult for me.
Well, I tend to believe sooner than later, you're going to see the people rise up at some point, because I would say the majority, even of Christendom, as it were, has no desire to go back to the days of no birth control, period.
No.
No, you know, people are having a hard time surviving on one or two, even two paychecks, so why would they want another kid unless it's planned?
How could this country even begin to cope with the population explosion that the removal of contraception would impose upon this nation?
Yep. Yeah, I was talking with someone the other day telling them my grandparents had 7-8 kids, and that was the norm back then in the 20s and 30s. We don't have to do that anymore unless it's by choice. And that's what the great thing about birth control or pregnancy control is, that you get to make the choice of whether or not you want to have a child. And
well, and I just, I mentioned an abortion being expensive contraception. Sandra was ready. I'm looking at a photograph here of a Louis Vuitton condom. It's just a condom in a Louis Vuitton branded wrapper. Care to guess the price, Kevin?
I'll say $20.
$68.
Wow. And it's a one-use condom, too, I bet.
They all are.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
$68 a pop.
Whoops. Yeah, and Sandra also notes, forget the University of Chicago. Try to Lenin, 1916, imperialism, the highest stage of capitalism. Bang, score for the win.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know. I hope the people, especially once this stupid election cycle is over, because as someone said, I forget who it was, you know the Democrats or the Republicans aren't going to win this election. They know it. And
well, they're not going to win in the House, and they're going to and it's I would not give them good odds of winning the Senate. I still think that Obama has a decent chance of being reelected.
Oh, I think he'll be reelected. I don't think they will win the presidency. Yeah, the House and the Senate may be up for grabs, but even then, I think if people get normal, everyday people get motivated to go out and vote, and I think this pregnancy control issue has
maybe it'll blow up in their faces. I hope it does.
It has. I think it has.
Kevin, I got to roll out of here, but have a wonderful weekend. It's awfully good talking to you, and thank you for the help earlier today.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And I am proud to announce, thank you very much to John for making the challenge. I am proud to announce that his challenge was met tonight, so we actually made the funding necessary this evening to meet one day's broadcasting. So thank you very, very much. And hopefully by Monday we'll have the telephone issues sorted out, and I'm going to work on the toll-free line. I promise you that I am. So have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this work. First of all, you who keep it all going with your kind gifts, as well as your ideas, your thoughts, your emails, your participation in the chat room. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, our moderators in the chat room, Lottie and Sparky. Thank you to our news ninjas, Susan and Gene. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy, our op-ed columnist, Reverbo. Thank you to my head writer, David in Tennessee, presently enjoying a show I'd love to see, presently enjoying the drive-by truckers in concert in Nashville. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And, of course, thanks always go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Go there. Join the mailing list. Get on the mailing list and get yourself one of the coolest T-shirts in the world. Save the endangered hillbilly. And always, 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 Gina, cutie, it's all for you.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! begin this Thorn in the Side Thursday here on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. What we do here, we like to call conversation radio. And if you're new to the process, you'll find out why in fairly short order, I'm sure. It is, though, as I noted, Thorn in the Side Thursday. And we've got a veritable locust tree's worth of thorns, a rose bush's worth. No, I will not be playing that song about thorns, roses having thorns. No, you cannot make me.
Ugh.
That 80s hair band ballad. But we'll get started. We will get started momentarily. Let's just put this out there for general consideration. Every night we try to raise around $100 to keep things going, because generally speaking, we try to raise $2,500 a month. This is a short month, this February, 29 days, even though it's longer than usual. And so consequently, we will be, we just need folks, $10 at a time even is fine. And thank you so much for all of those of you who have contributed to the Thrifty 250. $10 at a time, we'll be able to meet operating needs to keep all of this going. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. I continue to remind people, though, if you are concerned with the fee that PayPal charges, if you the PayPal account is tied to the email account, bobkincaid@gmail.com, and if you just go to PayPal and do your PayPal to that address, you'll have an option of personal versus whatever. Choose personal, click gift, and there are no fees, no transfer fees attached. Of course, you can always go to headonradionetwork.com, the tab contribute, whereat we keep permanently posted for everyone's convenience the snail mail address, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia 25801. And thanks to those of you who contribute via snail mail, it is very much appreciated, as is all of the support that we get to keep this little effort in the radio of the future going. Yeah, Thorn in the Side Thursday. Well, it is, and we will deal with them. But I'm a sucker for cute stuff, and this is one of those things. I got a link last night from Sandra to a recent episode of Sesame Street, an appearance by Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor, who dispensed a little bit of justice on the program. This is worth it because, well, it's Sesame Street, so necessarily there's a lesson, right?
Oh, hey, hola. This is my friend, Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor.
Hi, everybody.
Un cafecito?
Sí, gracias.
Finally, justice will be served.
Hey, baby bear.
Hi. Hey, I heard that there was a Supreme Court Justice on Sesame Street.
There is, baby bear. There is.
Hi, baby bear. I am Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor, but you can call me Justice.
Oh, well, you can call me Baby.
Okay, Baby.
Okay, Justice. Now, to be clear, what does a justice do again?
A Supreme Court Justice is a judge who solves arguments by giving his or her opinion.
That's just what I thought. Well, I need you to listen and solve a disagreement.
Wait a minute now, Baby Bear. We're trying to have a little coffee here.
No hay problema, Maria. I can handle this. I do it all the time. Just give me a second.
Wow, impressive.
I always wear these robes when I hear a case.
Perfect. Now I can tell you what happened.
Wait a minute. I have something to say, too.
I know who you are. You're Goldilocks.
And I know who you are. A Supreme Court justice. The perfect judge to hear my case.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Hold on a second. The justice has to hear my side of the story.
No, mine.
No, mine.
Don't worry. I will listen to both sides of the case. Okay? Baby, you go first.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Now, does the justice think it was right for Goldilocks to come into my house, uninvited, mind you, sit in my chair and break it?
I'm not sure. Let me hear Goldilocks' story next.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to break it. I didn't know it was his chair. I was tired.
Now, hold on just a minute. I'm not just funning with this. That little passage right there, what? It's a brilliant moment in children's television because it references one of the oldest principles in the English common law. Any of them. It really does. And I'll explain.
And it was the only chair that fit just right.
This is ridiculous. Plus, our cafe's getting cold.
This will only take a second, Maria. Baby, Goldilocks didn't mean to break the chair. It was an accident, and accidents do happen.
Well, I guess that is kind of true, but, I mean, my chair was still broken.
Well, I think that maybe we can fix that.
Yeah, how?
Goldilocks, do you have glue?
I do.
Then, to end this disagreement, I say you help Baby fix his chair, and then the two of you can live happily ever after.
I can live with that. Thank you, Justice.
Well, come on, Baby Bear. I'll fix this chair in no time at all.
Amiga, you are a very good sport.
Are you kidding? I wish all my cases were this easy. Ahora, el café, por favor.
Si.
We heard there was a justice on Sesame Street. We need her to end our disagreement.
Well, me too. I would like to state my case.
Oh, this is going to be a very long afternoon.
All in a day's work, Maria. All in a day's work.
Those three being three little pigs and a purple fuzzy wolf. I saw this and was charmed. Because, well, first of all, I love the fact that there's some Spanish going on there. Because even though Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, says that Spanish is a gutter language and has been echoed in that by such third-tier right-wing blatherscape gasbag luminaries as Neil Bortz. The fact of the matter is, this moment opens up children to the idea of justice for all. Now, we can have a larger conversation, and that's part of the thorn in the side part, about whether or not justice is for all in this country anymore. But for a moment, Let's just enjoy the brilliance behind this, because what happened there? You heard Baby Bear and Goldilocks. Goldilocks broke my chair, and Goldilocks said I didn't mean to. That is literally the oldest tort case there is. Torts are personal harms, civil harms done, not like crimes, but the stuff you sue over. And it goes back, and I can't. A lot of water over the legal dam in the last few decades. But I can't remember the name of the exact case. If I had my book handy, I probably could, or one of the legal eagles out there in the Horn audience might remind me. But it is the very fundament of, not that way, it's the very foundation of the idea of how the Anglo-American jurisprudential system handles wrongs. And it goes back to a really, really, and it's exactly that way. It's an old case that has to do with a pair of soldiers who were practicing their sword work. And one soldier, if I recall correctly, one soldier harmed the other one. And they took it to the court of King's Bench. And on the one hand, the guy said, "Aye, look, half me arm's gone. And the other one said, well, I didn't mean to do it. Really, I didn't. And out of that comes the principle that we understand you didn't mean to, but that doesn't change the fact that you remain liable for the harm that you did. You still have to somehow try to make it right. And the very same thing was at play here in Goldilocks and Baby Bear, in which she ordered Goldilocks to fix the chair. Because the basic principle at work in this is all liability is based upon fault. With harms that are done without malice, it is natural for us to say, but I didn't mean to. But didn't mean to is not part of the calculus. It is a question of whether you did, and if you did, then what harm resulted, and how do you make that harm right? Because at its very basis, the legal system evolved as a means of trying to get people from to desist in chopping each other up in matters of feud and vendetta. It was a brilliant attempt to create literally civil society, and it's made it all the way to Sesame Street. Now, can you imagine if the guest justice had been, Fat Tony Scalia or Slappy Thomas? Yeah, I don't want to think about that. No. You miserable bear, you're a bear. You have no rights. There's nothing in the Constitution that guarantees. What we need in this country is tort reform. Lawsuit crazy bears going after innocent, adorable little blonde-haired white children. Enough is enough. Because that's the way right-wingers are. And I bring that up because apparently the big right-wing clavern has opened today. It is called CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee. And as their opening speaker, they invited none other than that luminary of gaiety, jollity, and delight, Chinless Mitch McConnell.
And I want to tell you this, I always love coming to CPAC. And you probably know why. Conservatives are just simply more fun than liberals. Now, there's a reason for that, by the way. It's because we are always right. Now, the reason liberals are always wringing their hands all the time, you notice that? They're always wringing their hands all the time, is they know we've got better arguments than they do. So they spend half their time thinking how to convince people that what's wrong is right, and the other half looking for conservatives to tear down or CPAC conferences to disrupt. You all know the liberal playbook. Here's how it works. Pick a target, freeze it, personalize it, and then polarize it. But rarely have we seen those tactics employed with the kind of zeal we see today.
Yeah, because we're the problems. But hey, just remember, wing nuts are more fun to be around than liberals. Proof positive being this show in particular. Not really. I haven't had a full-on laughing fit like I had last night talking to Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin. I haven't had one of those in a long time. And it was just two little words that got me going, and I've muttered them to myself a couple of times through the day, and they still made me giggle. The eye, Bob. God. Yeah, they're just more fun than us. But apparently, Chinless Mitch doesn't have the best staff of writers because he's recycling material. They invited Chinless Mitch to do this same shtick back in 2009, and as part of the right-wing fascists are more fun than liberals, argument, he asked the following, quote, who wants to hang out with guys like Paul Krugman and Robert Reich when you can be with Rush Limbaugh? Yeah, I've still got the photograph up here. It's pretty hard to stomach. Steven Tyler and some woman and a guy bending over to talk to her. Steven Tyler looking like maybe he's not particularly thrilled at the moment. And then, to quote my darling wife Agnes, a woman behind Steven Tyler in the photograph who looks like she hasn't had an orgasm since the Coolidge administration. Another guy who's looking at his smartphone. And in the back corner, none other than the guy that Mitch McConnell referenced, Rush Limbaugh, with his finger up to the knuckle in his right nostril. Digging away. Mining for gold, I guess, looking for one of the crunchy ones. And you wonder why I refer to them as booger eaters. Exhibit one, Your Honor. Rush Limbaugh. Yeah, those are the people that are more fun than we are. Mm-hmm. No, really. Can you imagine Flush Flimbaugh, the oxymoron, on Sesame Street? My, that would be fun. He really would do the tort reform rant, I promise. These are the freaks that want to run your life. These are the freaks who want to decide what you can and cannot do in the bedroom. These are the, or your living room sofa for that matter, or on the floor, or, as the Beatles noted, in the road. Well, that's what it's going to be. They're all going to be doing it in the road if we don't have some moral clarity in this country. It is not by any stretch of the imagination prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. We pretty much took care of that yesterday. But I did think, I thought you might get a little something out of this. Now, I know if you've been listening to Malloy lately, and most of you have heard him talking about the fact that his really, really precious, he and Kathy's precious daughter, Molly, is in her first year of scouting. And she's in on her first campaign selling Girl Scout cookies. Who doesn't like Girl Scout cookies? Now, I'm not supposed to eat them, but who doesn't? I mean, come on. Thin mints that you stick in the freezer? Oh, go on, please. Tagalogs, ting-a-lings, yeah, the little shortbread things with the cup of coffee. Heaven. Well, the Family Research Council has sent out a prayer alert. They sent it out yesterday, boasting about their campaign against the Girl Scouts because the Girl Scouts don't try to beat up transgendered people or exclude transgendered people from their ranks, trans children. That such a thing, such human beings really do exist. The Family Research Council claiming the Girl Scouts work with Planned Parenthood to promote casual sex and train girls about living with HIV. Yeah, this is the prayer alert, okay? The prayer alert. Verbatim. Planned Parenthood, the victory for the Susan G. Komen Foundation was short-lived in breaking away from the largest private and tax-funded abortion business in America. Planned Parenthood's activist machine so bludgeoned Komen, they just can't get away from the imagery, can they? No, they love it. They love it. You know. So bludgeoned Komen that they agreed to reverse their stand. The Girl Scouts, whose leadership has been collaborating with Planned Parenthood for years, have found out, and their cookie sales are suffering. This is very sensitive for the Scouts. The Scouts had better confess their errors and make a clean break while they can, those filthy little females, purveyors of sin in the world, introduct
actresses of moral failing to the entire human family via that dirty slut Eve.
Okay, that part's not in there. But you can read it in there, see? Yet Planned Parenthood doesn't let its captives go easily. I guess this is where we would queue up Hotel California with the whole you can check out but you can never leave. And since it is a prayer alert, it's written in prayerful language. And so everybody put your hands in the air, sway a little bit. May Congress expose and defund Planned Parenthood, and may private organizations refuse to submit to shakedowns by Planned Parenthood and others in the abortion advocacy industry. May the pro-life majority grow in America until abortion has been abolished. Now, they're gooning on the Girl Scouts about Planned Parenthood. Right. And after the whole has-been-abolished business, they cite Exodus 23:2, Deuteronomy 21:1-9, 2 Kilograms 24:2-4. What's the periodic table? What's PR? Is that lead 2011? No, that's PB. 24:11 and 12. And then they cite EPH. Ephemeral 5:11-14, and then Matthew 27:4-6. Now, Matthew 27:4-6 rang a little bit of a bell with me. Now, they're talking about the Girl Scouts in their little prayer, right? Yeah. Let's see what Matthew 27:4-6 said. Well, let's back up so we get the full context. We wouldn't want to take a right-winger out of context. Now, would we know? Then Judas, which had betrayed him, when he saw that he was condemned, repented himself, and brought again the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned in that I have betrayed the innocent blood. And they said, What's that to us? See thou to that. And he cast down the pieces of silver in the temple, and departed, and went and hanged himself. And the chief priests took the silver pieces and said, It is not lawful for to put them into the treasury, because it is the price of blood. So what am I to understand from the Family Research Council? Do they want the little Girl Scouts to start committing suicide? By hanging themselves? Or are they trying to imply that ting-a-lings, tag-alongs, and thin mints are blood cookies? I mean, Jesus, this is just this is a cookie too far. These right-wing turds have actually dredged up the filthy old, discredited, nasty Jewish blood libel argument and dropped it on little girls. Little girls, little 7-year-old, 8-year-old girls. My girls were little 7-8-year-old girls once. How can you not? You know, we talk about this. We talk about the utter heartfelt, well, not heart, but you know, all the way down to the lower sub basement levels of their dank and stinking, vile, filthy selves. The misogyny that the right wing feels for penis-challenged human beings. And sometimes, do they really feel that way about women? Yes. All the way down to little girls. All the way down to little girls, citing Bible verses that suggest that they'd like to see little girls hang themselves, that they'd like to see little girls commit suicide. This is the sickness that is the right-wing religion-industrial complex in America. And hey, once again, you're subsidizing it because they put that filth out there tax-free. Not that you want to be subsidizing it or anything. You just don't have any damn choice in the matter. No choice. How about that? They like it that way, don't they? Thorn in the side Thursday, indeed. I read that and it just crawled all over me. I'd like to look at one of these freaks in the eyes. Really? Really? Really, Family Research Council and Tony Perkins?
Norman?
Yes, Mother Bates.
You want to see little girls commit suicide because you're upset about Susan G. Komen Foundations having been caught playing footsie with you? Really? I've got a note here from our buddy Tosh. That I think you might find interesting. He says, Christians? I hate to object again, but I will anyway. The folks you were speaking of on Wednesday night are not Christians. They are plainly false prophets who allege to speak in Christ's name. He knew such who exist and warned us against them in Matthew 7:21-23. In this section, it plainly points out that these false prophets to be denied by Christ because theirs is a worship of idols, the pro-lifers, for instance, who implicitly deny Christ and hate. The false prophets retort that they spoke in his name and did wondrous things, and he denies them for having intentionally misunderstood his teachings. Then Tosh says, I think you're in pretty safe territory, Bob. I really doubt there's a lake of fire in your future, for you do a damn good, darn good job of living and retweeting the real secret message of Christ. Oh, you're beginning to sound like a Gnostic there, secret message of Christ. Sorry, but you do. I think in part I understand where you are at being that looking at the insane crap my alleged fellow religionists say and do had just about driven me away from the church. When I discovered Sojourners and got involved in my church's growing care ministry where we go and feed people. I'll be cooking chili for one of the local missions next week for delivery on February 18th. I cooked pasta in January and helped in the kitchen in December. So, no, I understand all of that, Tosh. But the problem is, well, the problem is not Tosh's. Because he just clearly said that the Tony Perkinses of the world are not Christians. What we desperately need is for more people to say that. For entire churches to say that. But the problem is that there are far too many tax-exempt religious organizations out there who agree wholeheartedly with the Tony Perkinses and the Donald Wildmans and the James Dobsons of the world. It's frightening. Now, I think were a returning Jesus to respect, it probably would respond the way Tosh describes. But in the meantime, we're stuck with them, right? Corey from the Free State of Louisville writing in, damn, Bob, I haven't heard Mitch be this funny since the whole stop WVU to the Big 12 mess. Dude really knows how to pick the choicest comedy bits. / facepalm. See you on Saturday. Yeah, we got a game coming up. It's another trying season for the Mountaineers. See you Saturday, indeed, Corey. And you know, that thing's still going on. The front page story in the Charleston paper today was about the ongoing, incredibly getting nastier feud between Joe Manchin and Mitch McConnell, two guys who are two peas in a pod. Half the time, Joe Manchin is a better Republican than Mitch McConnell is. They both agree that people in Appalachia don't deserve clean air or clean water, that whatever is done in the service of the mountaintop removal industry is done well. And a reminder along those lines, I got a note last night from our buddy John, Dr. John in New York. Run over to Alternet. Be nice to see this thing get some traction. because over at Alternet, there's a story, the five greatest environmental disasters in the United States. Number one is mountaintop removal. The greatest, and the article says so, it says as much, it says it is the greatest single environmental and health, human health disaster in the United States. Maybe post a comment over there. It's a story by Eric Loomis. Five amazing places in the U.S. in danger of being destroyed by dirty energy. With regard to West Virginia, number one on the list, Eric Loomis writes, nowhere in the United States has suffered more damage from the energy industry than West Virginia. The early 20th century coal industry ran the isolated valleys of West Virginia, we call them hollers, as a medieval fiefdom until the United Mine Workers brought the industry to heel. Today, the coal industry has turned to mountaintop removal to pull the coal from the mountains. This process blows up mountains, allowing the companies to shovel out the coal at low cost. The pulverized land is dumped into the valleys below, choking stream beds and exposing local residents to hazardous chemicals. It leads to the erosion and deforestation that has contributed to widespread local flooding over the past decade. And the thing is, the data aren't all in. There's more coming, and it's going to be even more shocking. While profitable for industry, mountaintop removal is a disaster for humans and ecology. Recent studies have shown abnormally high birth defect rates in counties afflicted by mountaintop removal. The coal industry's insulting response to this study was to suggest incest was the real culprit. And, of course, you heard about that here months ago. We were among the first to point that out. Even though impoverished West Virginians are desperate for coal jobs, local residents have organized to fight mountaintop removal. That's why you hear every night on this program about Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, who are the actual point of the spear in this struggle. Coal River Mountain Watch is headquartered in the very heart of the sacrifice zone, the toxic waste zone that is mountaintop removal in southern West Virginia. The article concludes, while environmentalists are aware of the problem, halting the practice has never been at the top of progressives' national agenda. I probably should get that tattooed on my forehead. It should be. This is the greatest environmental and human health disaster happening in the United States today. Every word of that is true. I guess because it is Alternet, or maybe because of space limitations, Eric Loomis wasn't able to go into any detail, but one thing needs to be understood, and I don't like saying it, but it is the God's honest and unfly-blown truth, and that is that where it once occupied a position of greatness in this region, the United Mine Workers of America have become a grievous part of the problem. Because every day, some of those 3 million pounds of high explosives that are set off all over southern West Virginia are set off by United Mine Workers members. There's about 1,000 or so, I think, UMWA mountaintop removers. And that's really quite a lot when you consider that there's only about 4,000 mountaintop removers as it is. You can destroy an entire mountain complex with nothing more than a few D9 caterpillars, a bunch of ammonium nitrate and fuel oil explosives, and a drag line. It takes about 14 people. Now, do the long division and tell me that the United Mine Workers aren't an ongoing problem for anyone who has a hope that Appalachia, Central Appalachia, will have any kind of a future. And yet there are people involved in the effort to stop mountaintop removal that spend stunning amounts of time with their noses right up the rear end of the United Mine Workers of America. It baffles me. It frankly baffles me. But they do. So go and have a look, maybe comment on the story. It's at Alternet. The author is Eric Loomis. Five amazing places in the U.S. in danger of being destroyed by dirty energy. So we've had our fun. We've had our thorn in the side. Well, here, okay, one more. This is a thorn in the side from our side. And maybe I'll get some pushback on this. Whatever. The right wing are a bunch of pusillanimous, sanctimonious horses' rear ends. And I think on that we can all agree. But that doesn't mean that our side can't be that way too. Here, I offer you an example of a mistake. Apparently, a sleazy right-wing organization, and they are, they're sleazy, they're called the One Nation Pack. They raise money, and because of the nature, the slimy nature of the pack world, they're able to spend more on fundraising consultants, for instance, in 2010, to the tune of $32,837, than they actually made in contributions to candidates, $20,299, and for that we should probably be grateful. They're dodgy. They're sleazy, they're slippery, they're slimy. No problem there. So they're having a fundraiser. And there's a post out there, I'm not going to mention where it comes from, but there's a post out there that says that criticizes this fundraiser called Scotch and Cigars. There's been a perception that Washington, D.C. is dominated by lobbyists for special interests making big-dollar donations to rub elbows and sip expensive drinks with politicians in smoke-filled rooms. The conservative One Nation Political Action Committee is doing its best to keep that image alive and well. This Thursday, that would be tonight, the PAC will hold its second annual Scotch and Cigars fundraiser, according to an invitation posted by the Sunlight Foundation. A $1,000 PAC or individual contribution buys a spot on the event's host committee. Just a $50 check entitles you to a cigar and open selection of whiskey and wine, as well as good company with fellow conservative guests. I wouldn't go to that if you gave me the golden damn ticket to it, okay? I wouldn't go across, as my father used to say, I wouldn't go across the street to see those people. But it gets smarmier. It'll take place in Executive Suite number 3320 of Washington's Marriott Wardman Park Hotel. To encourage healthy behavior by young people, the event has a $20 discounted rate for anyone under age 30. Attendees will have to dress the part. The required dress code for the event is lounge suit for men, cocktail dress for women. And then, of course, there's the gleeful cackling of, there's just one hitch. The hotel is 100% smoke-free, so the cigars will have to be taken out to the balcony. The current weather forecast for Thursday predicts an overnight low of 28 degrees, or remain unlit. This is where we get a bad reputation. Stuff like that. This is where right-wingers point to us and say, see, they're, look at the nanny state. They don't want anybody to sit around and have scotch and cigars, or a glass of wine and a cigar, or a scotch and no cigar. See how they are? That's what gives credence to a turtle-faced freak like Mitch McConnell saying, they're just no fun! Now, nobody says that any progressive has to go to a scotch and cigar event, okay? But by the same token, this kind of snarkiness sort of reinforces the image that we have that has been created for us, that liberals and progressives are people who want to force everyone to eat tofu and you know, you get the idea. It's the annual 2012 tofu and navel gazing fundraiser. Yeah, that's the kind of thing. Yeah. But I read that and I thought, you know, God, quit it. Stop it. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a a little bit of a thorn in the side. Let's see. Just checking the email right here real quick. Andy wrote again. He says, the problem with the Sonia Sotomayor Sesame Street skit is that it portrayed a fantasy portrayal of justice. In reality, the rats determine these cases, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, by ideology before any testimony is given. You have on your rose-colored glasses today, don't you? Sonia Sotomayor, the token minority to hoist up for just such appearances. Nice Spanish touch. Wonderful. Well, it was a nice Spanish touch. It was, sometimes, maybe we need to teach children the way things are idealistically supposed to be before we start battering them with the notion of just how tawdry and effed up everything actually is. Because I would certainly not like to have Slappy Thomas or Fat Tony Scalia on there explaining to a little puppet about how it doesn't have any rights in this country not to be executed, at least not under the Constitution of the United States. We have, and this is the point, I think, we have a working judicial system in this country if it could be left alone to work. Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, providing the appropriate case in point, screaming about activist judges, when in fact the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals behaved exactly as the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals is supposed to behave. A three-judge panel heard the appeal, came to a, in this case, 2-1 decision. It can now go on and be heard in what's called en banc by the entire panel of the Ninth Circuit, and maybe then it'll go on to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will either hear it or not hear it. But justice is something that we need to teach children about in the way we would like it to operate. You know, that skit might have been a great... I just don't see that skit as the moment to look at Baby Bear and Goldilocks and explain that 1/100, 1% of the entire United States population is in prison, and that percentage is disproportionately represented by people who talk like Justice Sonia Sotomayor. Or look like Justice Slappy Thomas. It was charming. And it really was a neat little moment in writing because it touched on the very most fundamental aspect of jurisprudence. Jim, may I suggest what they do with their cigars? I think I know. And I would suggest the same thing. The problem is when we get all precious about it and act like we're somehow morally superior because, well, you know, we would never do that. Ugh. So there's that. Just checking to make sure that I haven't missed anything. Rush Limbaugh in that photo looks like he needs to have his nose fracked. Indeed. A question from Jay and Barb. Will the gift option only appear with a PayPal account? I'm not sure. I'm not sure. If you go to PayPal.com, maybe, I don't know. You log into your PayPal and then do it, so maybe that's the case. Yeah. So, with the understanding here that at a quarter before the hour, that this is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and because I refuse to play music by annoying 80s hair bands, my head writer David in Tennessee has come up with a much better alternative. Ladies and gentlemen, Hank Sinatra. We'll be back. Green News is next. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, February 9, 2012.
If there's going to be new nuclear in this country, then my job is to make sure that that's safe and secure.
New nukes for the U.S. New clean energy breakthroughs, ethanol from seaweed, the highest efficiency solar panels ever, a plastic-eating fungus, plus...
soak it in the green goo.
Yep, bake your own solar panels with powder.
Mmm, green goo. All that and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and... snarky comments.
We have seen the politicization of science like we have never seen before.
You're right, Rick Santorum. I wish you and the Republicans would knock it off. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, well, we know that the GOP has gone not just up to the cliff's edge, not just over the cliff, but down into the ravine
It
comes to green politics this year. But Rick Santorum's comments this week at the Colorado School of Mines was even insane by Republican measures, I think.
Yeah, he went all the way down the rabbit hole at the bottom of the ravine. He actually believes global warming is a worldwide hoax, which would require the worldwide scientific community participating in a global conspiracy for 150 years.
Here's some of his remarks this week.
Global warming, a absolute travesty of scientific research that was motivated by politics, motivated by those, in my opinion, who saw this as an opportunity to create a panic and a crisis for government to be able to step in and even greatly and more control your life. I, for one, never bought the hoax.
It's remarkable how many actual scientists appear to be running for the Republican nomination this year. Between Rick Santorum and his comments, Newt Gingrich saying that he is, an amateur?
Amateur paleontologist.
Right. So he understands this science better than the professional scientists do. It is a remarkable year. All of that in mind, what do you have for us today, Des?
Well, first, new nukes for the U.S.
Great.
Our staff has done a very thorough review. The staff of the agency has found that at this point they believe that these designs are safe and that these designs and then the plants themselves, the applications, have met our standards.
Well, what could possibly go wrong?
Yes, that was Nuclear Regulatory Commission Chairman Gregory Yasko back in November. On Thursday, the NRC approved the first new nuclear reactor licenses for the U.S. in 30 years. Utility giant Southern Company will add the two new reactors to an existing facility near the Georgia-South Carolina border that'll cost $14 billion. And if they go over budget, fail, or have an accident, guess who pays? You do. With a U.S. taxpayer loan guarantee of $8.3 billion, that's with a B, plus laws that ensure there will be zero legal liability for the nuclear industry. But it's important to note that this vote was 4-1. Chairman Yasko dissented. He voted against the new licenses, saying that they don't do enough to require the builders to incorporate the lessons learned from Japan's Fukushima nuclear disaster last year.
I'm completely confused. I thought the Barack Obama administration hated nuclear energy, hated American energy.
Except for all that money that they give it.
Oh, yeah, there's that.
In spite of anti-science right-wingers like Rick Santorum, those hoaxy scientists are actually moving forward anyway with breakthroughs and innovations, like a new breakthrough in creating a biofuel from cheap and abundant seaweed. It doesn't use farmland or fresh water. A team of researchers at a California startup have developed a microbe that is able to digest notoriously tough seaweed and then basically poop out ethanol. Student researchers from Yale working in the rainforests of Ecuador have discovered a fungus that eats plastic. This fungus eats polyurethane, a ubiquitous plastic in everything from garden hoses to truck seats. They found that it thrives in the conditions that you'd find in landfills. This could be a very big deal because polyurethane plastic is a serious trash problem around the world because it doesn't degrade, ever. Researchers at another California startup have broken the efficiency record for solar panels. Efficiency is the amount of the sun's energy a solar cell is able to convert into electricity. Solar panels currently on the market are able to convert only about 10 to 15% of the sun's energy, but these new solar cells have achieved a verified 23% conversion rate. But the most stunning innovation, to me, is the Betty Crocker Solar Power Cake Powder. That's how the researchers at MIT joke about their breakthrough. Okay, it's not really a cake mix, but it is literally a powder that can be mixed with green plant waste, like, say, grass clippings. They've isolated the protein and chlorophyll that enables these plants to convert sunlight into energy. The special powder enables the protein to still do its work outside of the living plant cell. Here's MIT's Andreas Merschen.
The dream is to eventually be able to send people just the stabilizing powder that is benign and inexpensive, find some kind of substrate, some kind of piece of metal, soak it in the green goo that they've added the stabilizing peptides to, and that's basically it. After that, you can connect a couple of wires and charge a battery, use it to illuminate something. You've got electricity from the sunlight.
At the moment, it only generates a tiny, tiny trickle charge, but they're hoping you do-it-yourselfers out there will start experimenting.
Well, with all of the crazy out there, Des, thanks for bringing some good news for a change to your Green News Report. For more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't worry about that body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
It sure is. And about a minute and a half early, as a matter of fact. So once again, we have extra time in the show. I don't... Mathematical? No. But anyway, I'm Bob. This is The Horn. It's Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I hope you will avail yourself of that. The lines are open, of course. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. And there's some changes coming, by the way. I'm not sure, but what, in the very near future, the toll-free line is going away, at least temporarily. I'll try to get it back as best I can. We're changing over telephone and internet providers in an attempt to stop having some of the problems we have had in the past and to make us a little leaner and meaner in light of the way fundraising has gone. So that changeover is supposed to happen tomorrow. Just a heads up, I wouldn't say a distinct possibility. I would say it's more like a vague possibility that the show might be interrupted by all of the line stringing and stuff that is that attends such a change. Again, I don't expect it to be the case, but if it is, you'll understand why. And if it is, I will I'll tweet. Okay, I will tweet out the circumstances. I hope not. And frankly, I hope I can find a reasonably inexpensive toll-free carrier in the fairly near future to pick up where this leaves off. Okay. But that's not the case for this evening. Like I said, you know the number, 877-443-2366, or direct dial 304-658-3333, and email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And I want to offer thanks out there to the first couple of contributions that have come in this evening, we are actually on a fairly nice track to take care of tonight's fundraising. I get the hush about fundraising. Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah, you'd probably enjoy it more than I would, wouldn't you? Although I hate it. I hate this part. And, well, our buddy Kate on the front range, she knows it, and that's why she sends in the emails sometimes, and that's why people like David from Maine pick up the baton as well, just because they know I just don't like doing it. I just want to get in and get behind the microphone and do radio, damn it. Ray, yeah, kick Comcast to the curb. Well, it ain't Comcast. And it's not so much as a kick to the curb as just profound frustration. And who knows, there may be more frustration when this comes in, but gosh, I sure hope not. It should be better. We have to wait and see. Now, where to go in the second hour of Thorn in the Side Thursday? How about Florida and public school, Broward County public school teacher Leslie Rayner? Leslie Rayner is married to a South Florida preacher. His name is the Reverend Willie Rayner. He's the preacher at Hopewell Missionary Baptist Church in Pompano Beach, Florida. Ms. Rayner has a problem. She says really awful crap to her students. She teaches at Blanche Ely, E-L-Y, probably mispronouncing it. I don't think that's Eli. I think it's Blanche Ely High School in Broward County, where she was talking recently to her students. Now, remember, she's a high school teacher. And because she is in South Florida, she has students who are Haitian immigrants, having fled the horrors of that poor, poor country. And she was talking to one of her Haitian students the other day, according to a story reported by the South Florida Sun Sentinel. And this one really just kind of knocks my socks off. And it's frustrating because, you know, the right wing is forever going after public school teachers. It's relentless. And people on our side of the debate do our best to defend public school teachers as they deserve to be defended. And then along comes Leslie Rayner, 46 years old, of Deerfield Beach, Florida. She got into trouble previously when she looked at one of her students and said, and I quote, "I wish they would put you in a boat and send you back where you came from." She was recently caught on video telling another student, "You got one time, chocolate." And, you know, you'd like to look at a situation like this and think, well, you know, it's not easy to teach. It's just not easy. And for someone who wanted to be a teacher to come into that process, well, there's got to be a learning curve. And new teachers are going to make mistakes. There's only one problem. Leslie Rayner is 46 years old, and she has been teaching for 22 years. In addition to saying, "You got one time, chocolate," She is also noted to have said, to have referred to a child as Little Chocolate Boy and Chocolate That Nobody Wanted, having been called on her hateful verbiage. Leslie Rayner responded by saying that she was, come on, everybody, one, two, three, taken out of context. She said chocolate is an endearment in the black community. You know, there's a big difference between playing Chocolate City and looking at a young Haitian man and calling him Chocolate Nobody Wanted. Yeah, because that's a term of endearment. Nobody wanted you! See, isn't that endearing? Don't you? Wouldn't you just love it if you were maybe a teenager struggling from day to day to survive in a new country that was very, very difficult, and you know, you didn't have much, but you made it to school every day, and there waiting for you when you got to school was the smiling face of teacher Leslie Rayner to remind you, nobody wanted you, chocolate! Like I said, Leslie Rayner has a history. Back when the earthquake hit Haiti, and you may remember we had some firsthand reportage of that because a member of the Horn family went down to do voluntary nursing work. Yeah, Janie. It was a stunning conversation. Obviously, it remains with me to this day. Nobody wanted you, chocolate! Well, back when the earthquake hit Haiti, apparently Leslie Rayner was faithfully watching Pat Robertson's 700 Club, because the way she handled the discussion of the crisis in Haiti, which I imagine was a significant discussion in her high school and in the classroom, she handled the discussion by explaining to her students that Haiti was suffering because Haiti had made a pact with the devil. The devil! Mm-hmm. That line is the single funniest line from, what is it, The Water Boy? By the incredibly unfunny Adam Sandler. Yeah, that's... I don't know if that was religion class or philosophy class or... Really shouldn't have been science or history or civics, should it? You know, their luck it probably was. Haiti is suffering because it made a pact with the devil. Of course, it's not surprising. Her husband is, after all, a missionary Baptist preacher, Willie Rayner. She said that her husband calls her sweet chocolate. I wonder if he follows up with, sweet chocolate, nobody wanted you. Nah, I didn't think so either. And then there's this. This is all part of the history that this woman brings to her position. In the same school where Leslie Rayner teaches, Another, and you can tell just here in the story that she is a thumper, right? A genuine thumper. Bible thumper. And that type will not shut up. Just going on and on and on. You have a blessed day, and well, if you're a homosexual, you're going to hell. You know, that kind of stuff. Well, one teacher at her school made the mistake of mentioning that, you know what, I'm an atheist. Leslie Rayner and another teacher responded by sprinkling what they said was holy water on her when she brought up the fact that she didn't believe in invisible juvenile delinquents in the sky. Smiting folks. All of this, and she still has a job. And here's the fun part. Even after the chocolate nobody wanted and little chocolate boy comments, the superintendent of schools couldn't quite find it in himself to fire her. Even after everything that I described to you that she has done, still, he won't fire her. See, there was a complaint, there was a significant complaint when she did the little holy water stunt. That incident was, in fact, reported to the Broward School District's Professional Standards and Special Investigative Unit. But they dropped the investigation. Called it off. Nothing to see here. These are not the right-wing, religiously insane droids you're looking for. Why? Because that unit and the school board was pressured, i.e. threatened and intimidated, because that's how they act, by a whole bunch of churches, and the charge was led by the church where her hubby, who calls her sweet chocolate, is the minister. So no, there will be no firing for Leslie Rayner, who tells children who have struggled more to continue existing on this planet in their short lives than she ever has in every blessed, every cussed day of hers. There will be no firing. Instead, the superintendent of schools has suggested 3 days suspension without pay and a requirement that Leslie Rayner attend diversity training. See, that's what you do for the brand new teacher who's dealing with the really, really pressure-laden realities of teaching in a public school. You know, you made a mistake. We're going to get you some diversity training. You take 3 days off without pay, and then you come back and you know, you're going to be fine. You'll be a good teacher, I'm sure. That's what you do. This is somebody with a history, and they're scared of her. And what's more, here's the real ha-ha. She's going to appeal that ruling. Really. And that appeal has already gone down, and I don't know what the follow-up is on it. She said, I'm a good person and a good teacher. She said, I have never nor will I ever offend a child. I have nothing against Haitians, Italians, or whoever else. This is a made-up false accusation. Italians? How did the Italians get into this? You are chocolate that nobody wanted. Yeah, I'm glad I'm not a parent of a child in Blanche Eli High School in Broward County, Florida. That'd be tough to swallow. But then again, the child that she referred to as being chocolate that nobody wanted might not even have both parents at home, might not have anyone to stand up for him or her. I've never offended Haitians or Italians or any... Well, I did say something once about the Finnish, but... Haitians and Italians? Fundies. When you can't send them to the moon. You can't... Well. Jim's at work. I would love to send that horror a Whitman sampler of my design. What a bitch. Get to it, Jim. Maybe a little crunchy frog or spring surprise. Well, good. I've got a little amen in that corner too. Ray writing in, agreed. Adam Sandler wants to be Jerry Lewis and is about as funny as Jerry Falwell.
Yes, yes.
Noting also, if you don't eat your meat, damn right-wingers want religion and hatred in our schools. Right, which will that being the right wing, you got to understand that will be then a good reason for them to close them, and as Jerry Falwell once argued, put education back in the hands of the church where it belongs. You know, so we can teach children that pi equals 3, like it says in the Bible. Or that the sun stood still in the sky one day. You get the idea. Now, onward. Here, let's since we've got a school, one school story, let's do two, since it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. Ow! Ow! Yeah. Let's leave Broward County, Florida. Warm and sunny Broward County, Florida. And go north to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where not too awfully long back, namely last week, last Friday, 6 days ago, that would be Friday the 3rd of February. There was a basketball game at Pittsburgh Brentwood High School. It was a basketball game between Pittsburgh Brentwood High School and Manesson. Pretty sure that's the correct M-O-N-E-S-S-A-N. Pretty sure that's the correct pronunciation. Manesson High School. Manesson was traveling to play at Pittsburgh Brentwood High School. And halftime came around at which point, with the permission of officials of Pittsburgh Brentwood High School, which incidentally is an nearly all-white suburban school. With the permission of the officials there, students ran out on the court at halftime in banana suits and made monkey noises to taunt the players from Manesson, which incidentally is predominantly an African American school. They're rivals, you see, Pittsburgh Brentwood and Manesson. After the banana and monkey call stunt, when halftime came, the players tried to go to their respective locker rooms. But before the Manesson players could leave the floor, Brentwood visiting Manesson, but it doesn't really matter. As the players were trying to leave the floor, fans surrounded the Manesson players and started making monkey noises at them again, hollering at them, using racial epithets, calling them monkeys and cotton pickers. Yeah. Really? Monkeys and cotton pickers. That was done by Brentwood players as well. According to Valley Independent, a news outlet, the security chief, Joseph Kazarian, on duty at the game, refused to intervene and sat back and just smiled and laughed with the Brentwood fans in the stands. Dang it. I don't care who you are, monkey banana suit. That's funny. Jesus. Welcome to America. You know, every time I see a story like this lately, I've been thinking about the famous last words of Tony Snow. You remember Tony Snow, don't you? That vicious right-wing gas bag who was for a time the spokes creep for George W. Bush, who declared that racism is over in America. Yeah. Not so much, I guess. But he's not around to deal with it. Here's the coverage, I think, that came from WTAE.
We're identical.
Well, after the damn commercial it is. And by the way, yeah, it wasn't just a one-off. It started as soon as the kids got there. And it was at halftime that it got ever so much worse. Sometimes it feels like you can't win.
Students in banana costumes at basketball games, prompting racial tensions at a local high school. We just got our hands on this video tonight. And investigator Paul Van Osdahl, Paul, you're live in the newsroom with what you've uncovered here. Paul.
Wendy, this happened Friday when Manesson played at Brentwood. Now, Manesson's team is mostly black. Brentwood is all white. Manesson supporters tell me the racial slur started as soon as they got to Brentwood's gym and they didn't stop until they left. And the worst part, they say, nobody at Brentwood did anything about it. This home video shows two Brentwood students dressed in banana suits, but the video does not show what they did at halftime.
The two young men decided to run around the gymnasium and refer to our kids as monkeys.
Joanne Jesus, whose son on Manesson is biracial, says it was not just the two students in banana suits who were behaving badly.
It was completely out of hand. They were taunting my son. They were calling him a cotton picker.
And they heard other slurs that we cannot repeat. But they say the worst part, Brentwood parents and school officials did nothing to stop it.
This is the school you're supposed to be teaching your children, not letting them go on acting rude and ignorant.
Nobody in that school did anything, and that's why I was so appalled.
We talked by phone to Brentwood's superintendent, who was at the game and says disciplinary action was taken against at least one student. Superintendent Ronald Dufala says, quote, any accusations of misbehavior we've been looking into, most of which we can't get confirmation on. And he also says there's some misinformation out there. But Manesson coach Joe Salvino says he's heard similar slurs at Brentwood in the past, and it needs to stop.
For them to allow that to happen, for them to allow that to go on, is just, to me, is just disrespectful.
Now, the Manesson superintendent tells me she called her counterpart in Brentwood to express her concern about what happened. Meanwhile, the Brentwood superintendent tells me he's been reviewing the videotape of the game today, and he expects to take possibly further disciplinary action when he finishes that review. Reporting live in the newsroom, Paul Van Osdahl, Channel 4 Action News.
I'd imagine so, Paul. Thank you.
Yeah, did you notice that? Words that we cannot use. Really? I mean, that's just one of those moments about for-profit media. Words you can't use or words that you won't use. They say that action has been taken. And here's the cop-out. The students are emulating college students they have seen on television who wear costumes during college contests. No high school team, Manesson or otherwise, or their fans are being singled out. This is just something that students do. Yeah, because when's the last time you saw a bunch of white kids playing basketball and the other kids were screaming, "You bunch of cotton pickers! You monkeys!" No. Brentwood High School, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. least none of those fine, upstanding little white children told them that nobody wanted them. Six of one, half a dozen of another. Two dozen. God. And it goes on. It goes on, the ugliness. And this is one of those where you would queue up Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, or Crosby, Stills, and Nash without Young, or whatever, and play Teach Your Children Well, because it is. It's learned in the home. It's learned in the home. You can't blame TV for this any more than, say, Mel Gibson could blame the booze for his diatribe about the Jews! It's learned in the home. And it's sad. It's sad. There's sad, there's crazy, there's mean. Lots of various and sundry variations on the theme. You remember we started by talking about the fine folks at CPAC who are having their little clavern this week in Washington, D.C.? It all got started this morning with funny man Mitch McConnell talking about what a laugh riot it is to be a right wing fascist. Well, it just went down the hill from there, because later on, Cal Thomas, who must be about a million years old, remember the creaky, cranky old right wing. He was blathering away. I used to play his commentaries when I was a little bitty, pimply-faced DJ at the gospel radio station all those years ago. By all rights, he should have been gone to glory by now, but he ain't. They trotted him out at CPAC so that he could get a rise out of the faithful there. Well, this is how he did it.
With us today. Ladies and gentlemen, let's hear from Rachel Maddow.
You guys want to make this only about religion, but listen, no, Mitt Romney is campaigning. Mitt Romney is campaigning saying that he would like to end he would like to end all family planning support at the federal level. He would like to eliminate federal Title X. Rick Santorum says that he would like states to be able to make contraception illegal. You can try to make this an issue of, oh, Democrats hate religion. But the fact is, churches were exempt from this from the beginning. This is about providing health insurance. And the Republican Party is waging war on contraception at this point in a way that that's where the discussion is.
Cal, let's talk about this religious, because this is serious. I mean, and we laugh about it, but this is serious in terms of, if they get away with this, what would happen in a second term? And we see a lot of outrage, but if that outrage doesn't turn to action in November, what are we looking at here?
Well, I'm really glad, Genevieve, that you played the Rachel Maddow clip, because I think that she is the best argument in favor of her parents using contraception. I would be all set. And all the rest of the crowd at MSNBC, too, for that matter.
Ain't it just funny? Oh, they are a laugh a minute, aren't they? The funny thing is that the clip of Rachel Maddow that they played before that bunch of the knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing fools, she is entirely 100% factually correct. And the only response that creaky, cranky, old, greasy-headed Cal Thomas had was that her parents should have made sure she never existed. That she is an argue for contraception. Well, you know what? Rachel Maddow is probably way too classy to say this, but, you know, Cal Thomas, I'm not. The best part of you ran down your mama's leg, son. You disgusting old coot. Lord Almighty. But this is what passes for their enlightened discourse. You know, God Almighty, the Brad and Desi weren't kidding earlier today. Rick Santorum jumped the shark. The frothy one has jumped the shark. The frothy one has put on the weathered leather black jacket, kissed Pinky Tuscadero, and cranked up the motorcycle and jumped the shark. But then again, do they believe this?
They are taking faith and crushing it. Why? Why?
Right.
When you marginalize faith in America, when you remove the pillar of God-given rights, then what's left is the French Revolution. What's left is a government that gives you rights. What's left are no unalienable rights. What's left is a government that will tell you who you are, what you'll do, and when you'll do it. What's left in France became the guillotine. Ladies and gentlemen, we're a long way from that. But if we do and follow the path of President Obama and his overt hostility to faith in America, then we are headed down that road.
To the guillotine? Really? You know what's next? Because the problem with being a right-winger is that you constantly have to one-up each other with the outrageous, the outlandish, and the insane. So the frothy one has effectively said to Ron Paul, Mitt Romney, and Rick Perry, you know, I'll see your war on religion, and I'll raise you a guillotine. So either cranky old Ron Paul, magic underwear Mitt, or Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, now has to say, I'll see your guillotine, and I'll raise you impaled on spits and doused in turpentine and used to light the Vatican gardens like Nero did. Jesus, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. And I mean, this is a very little knowledge we're talking about. But again, the frothy one was offered an opportunity to walk back that crazy shit. Sorry. Did he? No, hell no. He doubled down.
I just want to remind you, there was another constitution written similar to the time of the American Constitution. That was over in France. And they had a French constitution, the first of what I think is 18 that they now have since the French Revolution. But that revolution, and that constitution, by the way, was similar to the American Constitution. There was a difference, though. That revolution was founded on three principles: liberty, good; equality, excellent. But the third was different. The third was fraternity. Brotherhood, not paternity. Fatherhood.
What?
They did not get their rights.
This guy clearly sounds like a Sigma Chi.
They did not claim that their rights that came from God. It was a secular revolution of which we relied upon the goodness of each other. This is the less view of where America should go. And, of course, where did France go? To the guillotine. To tyranny. If there are no rights that government needs to respect, then what you see with Obamacare is just the beginning of what government will do to you.
Why? Huh? Obamacare is going to lead to the guillotine? Jesus, really, what's next? Is he going to say that he heard Obama the other day say that he would not be content until the last Republican was strangled with the guts of the last priest? UK listeners, do me a favor. Run to the local betting house and just give me I don't know, just put a pound on that for me, would you? That eventually I need a pound at whatever odds you can get. I need a pound on Rick Santorum will claim that Barack Obama wants the last Republican strangled with the entrails of the last priest. Can I get that? Can you do that for me, please? Just shoot me an email. Tell me what the odds are. Right. The eye. And it doesn't stop there. There's more. I mean, there's doubling down going on all over the place. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops are feeling positively froggy right now over this conscience business, this conscience BS. But can I ask a question about all the conscience stuff? And I acknowledge what I read on the New York Times blog this morning. Whose conscience? How is it that all of a sudden in America the only conscience that matters is the conscience of freaks who are religiously insane? How about the conscience of normal people? How about my conscience as a father of daughters? Because my conscience says that I will not stop. My conscience says that I will not refrain. My conscience says that I am called upon by all that I am and by the last breath that will exist in my body to protect my daughter's rights to control the workings of their own body. Whose conscience? How about the conscience of a young woman who has no good job, who finds herself, despite her best efforts, pregnant, and knows that the child coming into the world would be a child born into misery? How about her conscience? How about the conscience of somebody who recognizes that this planet is overpopulated past its carrying capacity and decides that maybe she needs, or maybe it's a husband and wife and they just, or, you know, remember the husband who went out into the night in Texas trying to find the morning after pill only to find a right-wing fundamentalist conscience-driven pharmacist at CVS or Walgreens or where the hell ever who wouldn't sell him, you might be a rapist taking it home to give your rape victim. When in fact, they were a married couple with children who didn't want another child. What about their conscience? But the only conscience that matters, apparently, are these loudmouth, meddlesome priests to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Listen, I haven't really heard because I haven't been paying attention because I just had to step away, you know, it's too much. But, so is Obama standing firm on this birth control requirement?
Well, it's kind of hard to tell, Sandra, because there's a whole bunch of people on our so-called side, on the so-called left, who are saying, well, you know, you do need to compromise with them.
Well, no, I mean, that's what I thought. I thought I was hearing that tenor going on. At that point, I thought, oh.
But that's not so much coming from the Obama administration as it is from the so-called liberals.
Well, we know about them. If you look, I mean, I'm still reeling from that poll that shows that they all embrace killing Americans and ending civil liberties and war. You know, they all are okay with it when Obama's doing it. I'm sorry to go there, but that's a really big indictment of the left to me. I think that, you know, you can't really call yourself the left if you don't embrace civil liberties, at least. Wow. I'm sorry, did I miss?
Yeah, there really is a bottom threshold, or you know, some sort of. There's a line in the sand, a litmus test, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, did I miss something? Because it seems to be that, you know, these poll numbers are showing that, well, we trust Obama and that's enough. And it's just like, you know, that's like Madison 101, isn't it? What the hell?
Well, you know, Madison's all busy bowing behind Obama in that painting. Albert was talking
Madison
about
one of the ones bowing? Well, I haven't looked at that.
Yeah, he's the one that's got his hands back behind Obama with his, you know, Obama with his foot on the right foot on the Constitution, and he's got his hands on. What are you doing? Look at this! And you know, he's a little short guy. Madison was.
Anyway, because it really doesn't make any sense. You know, trying to say it's some sort of religious issue, because why should you know, some Jew, for example, have to abide by some Catholicism, even if his employer is, you know what I mean? It doesn't really make any sense. I'm just trying to figure it out practically, because if a Jehovah Witness was running the place, they have their own beliefs about medical care. Would that apply? I mean, when do you draw the line?
I honestly don't know, but between that recent case that where the Supreme Court said that the Lutheran Church could fire a woman because she'd had some religious training.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, it's sort of it's a slippery slope, isn't it? But then
back beyond that, there's the case of the two Native Americans who were fired from their jobs, and the setup is that they were fired from their jobs because I guess they flunked a drug test because their religious practices required them to eat peyote. And when they went to file for unemployment, they were denied unemployment because it was deemed they were fired for cause, you know, employee misconduct.
Mm.
And the Supreme Court said, yep, you know what? That was employee misconduct. We're sorry, but it was. But it was an act of conscience. They were required by their consciences to... So, you know, as long as it's, I guess the is the demarcation, Sandra, that as long as it's a religion that, seven or eight out of nine members of the Supreme Court practice, we're going to stand up for that, but a couple of dudes seeing visions and staring at their navels as a result of tripping their brains out, nah, that's not really religion. That's heathenism.
Well, no, but I mean, it's just sort of, I can't believe that the whole, it's just getting any traction at all with this, because this is, you know, services provided by insurance. What does this have to do with your employer? I mean, if you want to have some coverage for whatever, what the hell does that have to do with your employer? I'm really confused on this.
Well, and that's why I said before I picked up the phone here, that's why I said that the bishops are doubling down. Because not only do they want this, they want to be exempted from the law of the United States of America.
Well, no, they don't want it available. I mean, this is the truth. I mean, this is the...
Well, it is, but now they're arguing that any employer should be able to deny contraceptive coverage. And the walk-away quote on this one was just stunning. The general counsel for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, Sandra, is a guy named Anthony Piccirillo. And he said, he argued that all employers should be able to deny contraceptive coverage, and his reasoning was as follows. Remember, this is a licensed lawyer, okay? And this is a quote. If I quit this job and opened a Taco Bell, I'd be covered by the mandate. What is it? A Taco Bell? Really?
What?
Yeah. If I quit this job, General Counsel for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, and opened a Taco Bell, I'd be covered by the mandate. In other words, I'd have to provide contraceptives. Fundamentally, what these people are arguing is that they're not happy having a secular society. They want religion to be dominant in this country.
Well, and which means that, you know, women are under control. I mean, to me, this seems to be the basic idea, because I always get back to if you can't control, you know, your family planning, you know, you're in trouble if you happen to be a female. So now they're just going.